to Ezekiel and said, "Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion. Then take another stick and write upon it for Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companion. And join them one to another into one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand."
Welcome to Double Portion Inheritance with Maria Merola, brought to you by DoublePortionInheritance.com. And now, Maria Merola.
Good evening, Mishpucha, friends, family, and Messiah. Tonight is April 3rd, 2014. I'm continuing part two of this teaching that I did from last week entitled, "Did Messiah Eat the Passover the Night Before He Died?" Last week I did part one of this teaching, and this week I'm doing part two. I'm hoping to get through all of it before Passover. There probably will be four parts to this teaching. We'll see how it goes. In the meantime, if you are interested in actually reading the ebook of this teaching, go to my website at doubleportioninheritance.com, and in the store tab, you'll see downloading ebooks. You'll see a tab that says download ebooks. And you can download this message in ebook format. And if you would like to receive my flash drive, I offer a flash drive with 60 of my ebooks on it for a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry. I will send you that flash drive. Included on the flash drive will be this teaching, "Did Messiah Eat the Passover the Night Before He Died?" Also, I also have at my website a Haggadah, a Passover Haggadah. For those who are maybe brand new to keeping Passover and you really don't know where to start, you don't need to belong to a synagogue or a Messianic synagogue in order to keep a Passover. All you have to do is go to my website, look under free downloads, and you'll see the Passover Haggadah. You can download that Passover Haggadah. What is a Haggadah? It just means it's just a booklet telling you how to conduct a Passover Seder. Also, it's in the same section under my store tab that says download ebooks. You can download it there as well. And it's also included on that flash drive for $60 donation to the ministry. I will send you the flash drive that includes 60 ebooks, and the Passover Haggadah is included on that as well. You can just simply print out the Haggadah at any print shop, and you can use that for your Passover. You can do it in the privacy of your own home. My Passover Haggadah is all in English, so you don't need to know Hebrew in order to do a Passover Seder at your home. Also, I want to let you know, if you are interested in that flash drive, just simply write to me at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com. Make sure you put in the subject line flash drive so that your email will not get buried under a lot of junk mail that I tend to get, and I'll notice it right away. So just write to me and I'll give you the instructions on how you can receive that flash drive. So let's start with where we left off last week. I was explaining last week why I believe our Messiah actually ate the Passover meal the night before he died, but then the next evening he actually became the Passover. Now, this mystery that has eluded many people for centuries is easily understood when we view this through the lens of the two-house dichotomy. You see, there are those who don't understand that there are two houses of Israel. In the days when Israel was leaving Egypt, they were one house. They were all united as one nation, Israel. And then, of course, there were Egyptians or strangers who sojourned with them. But in the days when Messiah came, the nation of Israel was divided into two separate nations. After King Solomon died, they were divided into two separate nations, the house of Judah and the house of Ephraim. And so our Messiah came for the 10 lost tribes known as Ephraim. Okay, that's who he came for. He said, "I've come for the lost sheep of the house house of Israel. And so because there were two houses, our creator Yahuwah knew this in advance, and therefore I believe he designed Passover to be between two evenings on purpose, because he knew that the year that our Messiah was going to be the Passover lamb, that it was going to be necessary for there to be two nights of slaughtering. And in those days, I discovered historically that they did have two nights of slaughtering between two evenings for two houses of Israel. And I'm going to explain that further. But you see, those who purport that Messiah did not eat the Passover lamb the night before he died will often use this passage in Exodus 12:22 to make the point that Yahushua and his disciples left the upper room that night to go to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. So let's examine this passage to get some understanding of how the Torah commandment applied back in the first century in Jerusalem. It's in Shemot, or Exodus 12:22. It says, "And you shall take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two side posts and the blood that is in the basin, and none of you shall go out at the door of his house until the morning." Okay, as you can see, the Israelites in Egypt were commanded not to go out at the door of his house until morning. But why? Well, it was because when they were living in Mitzrayim, or Egypt, they were in a heathen nation where the blood of the lamb did not cover those who were not in covenant with Yahuwah. But in first century Jerusalem, the house of Yehuda or Judah were in the house. In other words, they were in covenant. And so all of their homes were under the blood of the lamb because they were all keeping Passover. And so to be within the city limits of Jerusalem meant that they were in the house. Our Messiah even described this in Matityahu, or Matthew 23, verses 37 through 38. Listen to what he says. He says, "O Yerushalayim, Jerusalem," he says, "O Yerushalayim, you that kill the prophets and stone them which are sent unto you, how often would I have gathered your children together, even as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and you would not." He says, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." You see, he's calling Jerusalem your house. So in the days when our Messiah was here ministering, the house was actually the city limits of Jerusalem. And so on the night when our Messiah ate the Passover with his disciples, who was the first one to leave the house or leave the covenant? It was Judas. You see, Judas is the Greek rendering of his name, but in Hebrew, it's Yehuda or Judah. You see, he represented the whole nation of the house of Judah. Judas, or Yehuda, betrayed him, and so the death angel took him because of his disobedience. Yehuda, or Judas, was a picture of the disobedient Egyptians who also perished because they were not under the blood, or in other words, they were outside of the house. When Yehuda, or Judas, betrayed his Messiah, he left the covenant. He left the house of Judah where the blood covering was. Therefore, when Yahushua and his disciples went to pray in the Garden of Gethsemane, they were still in the house because they were under the blood covering of the house of Yehuda. Now, the next morning of the 14th of Abib, after Israel ate the Passover, in Exodus chapter 12, Moses and Aaron went to negotiate their departure with Pharaoh. By that point, they were allowed to leave their homes. Likewise, the next morning, Yahushua was summoned by Caiaphas, Herod, and Pontius Pilate, and then he and his disciples left the house when they were escorted outside of Jerusalem to the place of execution. Our Messiah was escorted outside of Jerusalem, which was outside of the house. This was where the place of execution was. And for all those who had left the covenant the following day when they shouted, "Crucify him." All right, now let's talk about the communion or the Passover. You see, those who argue that Messiah did not actually eat a Passover meal with his disciples are making it appear that the Apostle Shaul or Paul was instituting a brand new ordinance of which the Roman Catholic Church has branded as Holy Communion. In the King James Version, let's read it, 1 Corinthians 10:16. It says, "The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ?" Okay, that's how it reads in the King James Version. But what does this word communion mean in Greek? It is Strong's number 2842 in the Greek Strong's Concordance. It's koinonia. It means fellowship. It means community. It means joint participation. You see, the word communion is not some type of ordinance or ritual, for it simply means to have fellowship with Messiah. And this is what should be experienced when we keep Passover. Now let's read 1 Corinthians 10:16 with the word communion replaced with the word fellowship, and we'll get a whole new meaning from this. It says, "The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the fellowship of the blood of Mashiach? The bread which we break, is it not the fellowship of the body of Mashiach?" See, he's telling us that this cup of blessing, which is the third cup in a Passover Seder meal, that this cup of blessing is meant to bring us into fellowship with his blood covenant. So how can we be certain that Shaul or Paul is talking about Passover? Well, we can easily tell because he's using the term cup of blessing, which is the third out of four cups used in a traditional Jewish Passover meal. If this was a brand new ordinance called communion, why then does Paul use Passover terminology? We know that what is referred to as the Lord's Supper in 1 Corinthians 11 is the very same thing as Passover, by the fact that Messiah said, "As often as you do this in remembrance of me." Also important to note is that whenever you see the term Lord in the Brit Hadashah or the New Testament, and the Greek translation is kurios, it means that the original word should be the Father's name, Yahuwah, not Lord. Therefore, the Lord's Supper is actually Yahuwah's Supper. In Exodus 12:11, it is called Yahuwah's Passover. But how often did they do this? They did this once per year on Passover, not every Sunday morning in church. Was this a brand new ordinance that he was adding to the Torah? And what about Deuteronomy 12:32, where we are commanded not to add to nor diminish from the commandments? Was Yahushua, our Messiah, adding something new to the Torah? Of course he wasn't. Since the great Exodus in the days of Moshe, the nation of Israel had already been doing this as a day of remembrance. And that is why Yahushua said, "As often as you do this in remembrance of me." It was because they were already doing this as an annual remembrance. Let's read it in Shemot or Exodus 13:3. "And Moshe or Moses said unto the people, remember this day in which you came out from Mitzrayim or Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand Yahuwah brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten." Okay, he's telling us, remember this day. So now we know what our Messiah was commanding us to do in remembrance of him. Those who say that our Messiah did not eat the Passover are therefore in agreement with the Roman Catholic Church by treating this as a separate ordinance called Holy Communion, of which nothing was ever instituted in the Torah to be kept forever. Therefore, when Paul was talking about Yahuwah's Supper or the Lord's Supper, it was the very same thing as Passover. You will notice that Paul was rebuking the Corinthians because they were not properly discerning that their fellowship together should be based on the covenant relationship. And so because they were not properly discerning his body and blood, listen to what Paul said. He was warning them that you're not treating this as Yahuwah's Supper. You're treating this as a free for all. That's basically what he was saying. They were not properly discerning that their fellowship together should be based on the covenant that was first instituted at the original Passover in Exodus 12. Let's read it. 1 Corinthians 11:20-24. He says, "When you come together, therefore, into one place, this is not to eat Yahuwah's Supper." Why is he saying this is not to eat Yahuwah's Supper? He's rebuking them. He's saying, you're not doing this the right way. You're not eating his supper. You're treating this like a party or free-for-all. In verse 23, he says, "For I've received of Yahuwah that which also I delivered unto you, that Yahushua, the same night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. This do in remembrance of me.'" Now, it should be obvious here that if our Messiah is using bread to symbolize his body and leaven is a metaphor for sin, then why would he use leavened bread to symbolize his sinless body? Those who say that he ate leavened bread the night before his sacrifice are therefore insinuating that he was not the sinless lamb. Let's read 1 Corinthians 11:25. It says, "After the same manner also he took the cup when he had supped, saying, 'This cup is the renewed covenant in my blood. This do you as often as you drink it in remembrance of me.'" Now, you'll notice it says that Messiah had supped. That means that he ate with them. And some people insinuate that he didn't eat, that only the disciples ate and he simply watched them. That's not true. It says he had supped. 1 Corinthians 11:26, it says, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you do show Yahuwah's death till he come." Now, in order to understand the difference between the biblical Passover supper versus the Catholic communion, see my blog entitled "What is the Catholic Mass?" All right, now I want to talk about terminology confusion. One of the biggest reasons why people struggle to understand whether or not our Messiah actually ate the Passover meal is because of terminology confusion. In order to understand the terms that are used interchangeably, we must understand that the Torah commands that we not eat leaven for a total of 8 days, commencing on the 14th of Abib and ending on the 21st of Abib. Let's read it. It's in Shemot, or Exodus 12:18. It says, "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at evening." Now, the first thing you will notice is that we begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib at evening. However, as I mentioned earlier, the phrase "at evening" literally means between the two evenings, as seen in Exodus 12:6. The phrase "in the evening" literally means between the two evenings. In Hebrew, it's ben ha'arev. This means that we actually begin Passover on the first evening of the 14th, just as the 13th of Abib had ended. So the commandment to eat unleavened bread for 7 days means in addition to that first day when we are commanded to slaughter the lamb on the 14th. These days begin with the 14th of Abib and end on the 21st of Abib, inclusive, for a total of 8 days. Now, there are times when you will see the phrase "feast of unleavened bread," and this pertains particularly to the 15th of Abib and onward for the remaining 7 days of the feast. You will also see times in the Brit Hadashah, or the New Testament, where the phrase "days of unleavened bread" appears. And this is referring to the entire 8 days between the 14th and the 21st inclusive. You will also see the phrase "feast of Passover," which is referring specifically to the remaining 7 days of the feast of unleavened bread following the day of preparation, also called Passover. You see, on the 14th of Abib, or Passover, it is called the day of preparation, when we are instructed to clean out the leaven or the yeast from our homes. And so the following day, the 14th of Abib, called Preparation Day, begins the actual feast of Passover, otherwise known as unleavened bread, for 7 more days. But if we actually begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib, we have a total of 8 days. That first day on the 14th of Abib is a preparation day. Sometimes all 8 days are being spoken of inclusively, and at other times only the 7 days of the actual feast following the preparation day is being spoken of. Some people want to cancel out what the other 3 Gospels say about our Messiah eating the Passover lamb with only one verse from John 13:1. They rationalize that the other Gospels contain mistakes and they cannot be trusted. But they reason that the book of John is the only one that is correct. We can see from John 13:1 that the phrase "feast of the Passover" is specifically referring to the 7 days remaining of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and this was still on the 14th of Abib, the preparation day, when our Messiah ate the Passover supper with his disciples. By combining the information from all four Gospels, we can ascertain that this supper was indeed a Passover meal on the 14th of Abib, prior to the actual Feast of Unleavened Bread, also called the Feast of Passover. Now, there is something that I want to point out that totally debunks the theory that Matthew 26:17 is a mistranslation with the word first. As I already pointed out earlier, the word protos in Greek most oftentimes means first, and rarely does it mean before. But now the book of John records that this was before the Feast of Passover, and so we should look up the word to see if the word for before is protos, which would add more weight to these people's false argument that Matthew 26:17 mistranslates the word before as first. But when we look up the word for before in John 13:1, we find out that it is not the word protos. The word for before is number 4253 in the Greek concordance, which is the word pro rather than protos. This proves that there is a distinction between the Greek word protos and pro. The word protos actually means first, while the word pro means before. Those who want to disqualify Matthew 26:17 as being a mistranslation are now proven wrong. In Matthew 26:17, if it really should say before instead of first, then the Greek word should be pro and not protos. In John 13:1, this is not in conflict with the other Gospels. This was before the Feast of Unleavened Bread, interchangeably called the Feast of Passover. This was on the 14th of Abib, and it was before the actual feast, and they had just finished eating the Passover supper together. Let's read it in Yehuchanan or John 13:1-2. It says, "Now before the Feast of Passover, when Yehoshua knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put into the heart of Yehuda," or Judas Iscariot, Shimon's son, "to betray him." Now, what are we observing here from all four Gospels? We are seeing that the terms Feast of Unleavened Bread and Feast of Passover are used interchangeably to mean the seven additional days commencing on the 15th of Abib. But when we see the phrase days of unleavened bread, this is inclusive of all 8 days to include the day of preparation, which commences on the 14th day of Abib. If you get my ebook, if you download my ebook on this, you will see that I've provided a link to an article. It's by Triumph Prophetic Ministries. And in this article, I'm only going to quote just a small excerpt of it, but this is what they say concerning the 14th and the 15th, which has been an age-old controversy, and they give some explanation that might clear some things up. It says, "The Gospels appear to say that the Messiah ate a Passover meal with the 12 on the evening beginning Nisan 14, and John appears to say Jews were having their Passover meal one day later. There are different theories to explain this. The Sadducees and Pharisees disagreed on the day of Passover. The Sadducees, the more conservative group, believed the feasts of Passover and unleavened bread were separate feast days. They held Passover on the 14th as Elohim decreed in Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. Those of the majority opinion, including the Pharisees, held Passover on the 15th. Thousands of people would come to Jerusalem to have their lambs ritually slain in the temple. If they only had one day in which to prepare for the Passover, it would have been extremely difficult to have slaughtered all the lambs brought in to be sacrificed. Therefore, they worked on two different time scales. The northern part of the country went with the old way of dating, starting from morning and going to the following morning. The southern part of the country followed the official dating method from evening to evening. Thus, there were two times when lambs were being killed in the temple for sacrifice." This comes from Samson R. and Pierce, L.A. Family Guide to the Biblical Holidays, Heart of Wisdom Publishing, June 2001, page 112. As you can see from this article, the historical account shows us that the lambs were slaughtered the evening before our Messiah was sacrificed on the tree, and they were slaughtered again the following evening. There were two evenings of slaughtering lambs. Okay, I'm back from the commercial break, and as I was saying, I'm going to show you conclusive evidence that our Messiah, Yahushua, ate the real Passover lamb with unleavened bread. Our study begins with the Gospel of Mark. Let's read it. Mark 14:12. Now, I'm reading it from the King James Version, but I have updated the archaic language. Okay, and the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, "Where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover?" Okay, now, something I want to point out. The word day in this passage is italicized. So the word day was not there. So we could read it as if it says, "And the first of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover?" Okay. Now, the next verse, Mark 14:13, it says, "And he sends forth two of his disciples and says unto them, go you into the city, and there shall meet you a man bearing a pitcher of water, follow him." Next verse, Mark 14:14, "And wheresoever he shall go in, say you to the good men of the house, the master says, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?" Mark 14:15, "And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared, there make ready for us." Mark 14:16, "And his disciples went forth and came into the city and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And in the evening he came with the 12." That's Mark 14:17. Now Mark 14:18, "And as they sat and did eat, Yahushua said, verily I say unto you, one of you which eats with me shall betray me." Okay, now you will notice that verse 16 says they made ready the Passover. Verse 18 says they ate. Messiah himself said, one of you which eats with me, indicating that he was eating. Not just them, he was also eating. He says, one of you which eats with me. What did they eat? They ate what they had prepared in verse 16, which was what? The Passover. And what was it that they had prepared? The Passover. That means that they actually killed the lamb, roasted it, and ate it on the night of the 14th of Abib with unleavened bread, not leavened bread. Some people argue that the Passover meal that he ate only consisted of bread and wine, and there was no lamb involved. But what exactly does the word Passover mean? If our Messiah actually ate the Passover with his disciples, how does one eat a Passover? Let's see what the Greek Strong's Concordance shows us for this word Passover. It's number 3957 in the Greek Strong's Concordance. It's Pascha. Pascha, it says, of Aramaic origin, the paschal sacrifice which was accustomed to be offered for the people's deliverance of old from Egypt. The paschal lamb, the lamb the Israelites were accustomed to slay and eat on the 14th day of the month of Nisan, the first month of their year, in memory of the day on which their fathers, preparing to depart from Egypt, were bidden by Elohim to slay and eat a lamb and to sprinkle their doorposts with its blood, that the destroying angel, seeing the blood, might pass over their dwellings. Messiah crucified is likened to the slain paschal lamb, the paschal supper, the paschal feast, the feast of the Passover, extending from the 14th to the 20th day of the month Nisan. Now that is precisely what it says in the Greek Strong's Concordance for the word Passover. It's Pascha. Okay, now let's see what the Aramaic Peshitta says. Now, there's ample historical evidence that the New Testament scriptures were first written down in Aramaic before being translated into Greek. Now, Andrew Gabriel Roth published the Aramaic English New Testament, and I show below what the Besorah, or the Gospels, say regarding our Messiah eating the Passover. The Aramaic translation for the word Passover is Pascha. Okay, so let's read it from the Aramaic English New Testament. Matityahu, or Matthew 26:17, says, "Now on the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples drew near to Yeshua and said to him, 'Where do you want us to prepare for you to eat the Pascha?'" All right, now in Mark 14:12, in the Aramaic English New Testament, it says, "And in the first day of the unleavened bread in which the Yehudians slay the Pascha, his disciples were saying to him, 'Where do you desire for us to go and prepare the Pascha to eat?'" And now finally in Luke 22:8 in the Aramaic English New Testament, it says, "And Yeshua sent Kepha and Yochanan and said to them, 'Go prepare the Pascha for us that we may eat.'" Okay, so how do we know that Messiah actually ate unleavened bread? We are going to uncover this puzzle by first removing the additional words that were not in the original text of the New Testament. The verse below that I'm about to read from Matthew 26:17 has italicized words highlighted in red, which I've highlighted in the article in red, and I place them in brackets to indicate that these words were added by the English translators. So let me read it to you from the King James Version. Matityahu, or Matthew 26:17, says, "Now the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the disciples came to Yehoshua, saying unto him, 'Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?'" Now, the term day is italicized, and The phrase the feast of was added by the translators. It's in italics. So let's read it without the italicized words. Matthew 26:17 says, "Now the first of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yehoshua, saying unto him, 'Where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover?'" Now you're going to notice that if this was the first of unleavened bread and he had not died yet, this means that it was the beginning of the 14th day of Abib, just after sundown on the 13th of Abib, and they were already calling this the first of unleavened bread. See, the Greek word used for unleavened in this passage is number 106 in the Greek Strong's Concordance. It's azimos. It's really azumos. It's pronounced azumos. It's unfermented, free from leaven or yeast, of the unleavened loaves used in the Paschal feast of the Jews. It says, metaphor, free from faults or the leaven of iniquity. You see, he was telling them to prepare unleavened bread to be eaten with the lamb, according to the Torah commandment. Now, some people would rationalize that when he broke the bread with his disciples and ate it, that this was leavened bread. But let's look at the word used in Mark 14:22. Okay, let's look at the word. Mark 14:22 says, "And as they did eat, Yehoshua took bread and blessed and broke it and gave to them and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.'" What is the Greek word used here for bread? Well, it's number 740 in the Greek Concordance, Strong's Concordance. It's artos. Let's see what artos is. It says, "Food composed of flour mixed with water and baked. The Israelites made it in the form of an oblong or round cake as thick as one's thumb and as large as a plate or platter. Hence, it was not to be cut but broken. Loaves were consecrated to the Lord of the bread used at the love feasts and at the Lord's table, food of any kind." See, this word artos is not saying that this is leavened bread. People are assuming that our toast is leavened bread. It says nothing of the sort. It just is a word, a generic word, to describe food. You see, there's nothing that indicates that this was leavened bread. Nothing. The Greek word artos is a generic word used for any kind of bread, whether leavened or unleavened. But we already know it was unleavened bread because he already commanded them to make ready the Passover on the first of unleavened bread. And so if you put these two Greek words together, artos and azumos, you get the term unleavened bread. The word azumos simply means unleavened, and it does not include the word bread with it. It can mean anything that is unleavened or unfermented, even wine. And so the word artos is just the Greek word for bread, just like our English word for bread in general. If I use the word bread in a sentence in English, everyone knows I mean bread with leaven in it, yeast. But now, if I tell you that I'm keeping the Passover, and I tell you that I ate bread, you are going to know that what I ate was no ordinary bread. You are going to know that I ate unleavened bread. But most importantly, if he was using leavened bread as a metaphor for his body, that means that he would have been a sinner. You see, leaven is a picture of sin, and therefore his sacrifice had to be represented by a sinless, spotless lamb and bread with no leaven in it. Now, another very important factor to take into consideration is that the word day in this passage in Matthew 26:17. The word day is in italics. Okay? And so let's read it again. Now the first day of the feast of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahushua, saying unto him, where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover? This means that these words were not in the original text. Therefore, the verse should read like this. Now, the first of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Yahushua, saying unto him, where will you that we prepare for you to eat the Passover? You see, the fact that this was not the feast of, okay, it was not the feast of unleavened bread, but merely the first of the days of unleavened bread is extremely important. The Torah tells us to begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th day of the month Abib, according to Exodus 12:18. And so that is why in Matthew 26:17, Yahushua is telling us that this was the first of these days of unleavened bread. It would not commence the actual feast of unleavened bread until the following night on the 15th of Abib. The English translators took the liberty of adding these words into the text of Matthew 26:17, but because they had no gauge for keeping the feasts of Yahuwah, they confused the readers, making it appear that this was actually the 15th day of the month of Abib, but it was only the 14th day of the month of Abib. And the Torah tells us to begin eating unleavened bread on the first of those days of unleavened bread. Some people argue that the phrase first of unleavened bread in Matthew 26:17 should say the day before unleavened bread, but this is not necessarily true. Let's see the word for first in Greek as follows. Okay. Strong's number 4413 for the word first in Matthew 26:17 is protos. Protos says first in time or place, in any succession of things or persons, first in rank, influence, honor, chief, principle, first, at the first, foremost, in time, place, order, or importance, before, beginning, best, chiefest, first of all, former. Now, as you can see, the primary application of the word protos means, most often means first, and only in rare cases could it mean before. But the dead giveaway that Matthew 26:17 says first and not before in this instance is evidenced by the fact that later on in the chapter, Messiah was telling his disciples to go and prepare the Passover and that he was going to eat the Passover with them. Okay? So if he commanded them to go and prepare the Passover, and he told them he was going to eat it with them, and this was before Passover, how then could he eat the Passover before Passover? This makes no sense, does it? The entire context of chapter 26 of Matthew tells us that this was the first of the days of unleavened bread, which included the day of preparation called Passover. Now, even if the word protos is indeed being translated as before, unleavened bread, in Mark 26:17, it does not change a thing. As a matter of fact, it helps our case even more, for the fact still remains that this was the beginning of the 14th of Abib, just as the 13th of Abib had ended, and the disciples had just asked our Messiah, Yahushua, this question, if I may paraphrase, "Where do you want us to go and prepare the Passover for you so that you may eat it?" Now, this was the perfect opportunity for him to reply back to his disciples with a response that goes something like this. "Hey guys, sorry, but I won't be able to keep the Passover with you tomorrow night because I'm going to be hanging on a tree this time tomorrow." But no, he did not say this to them. In Luke 22:8, listen to what it says. It says, "He sent Kepha," or Peter, "and Yehuchanan," or John, "saying, go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat." Now, pay attention. What was he saying? Was he lying? Why would he say to them, "Go and prepare us the Passover that we may eat"? If he wasn't eating it, why would he say, "Prepare the Passover for us so that we," including himself, "may eat it"? Was he playing games with them? Was he only pretending that he was going to eat the Passover with them? And then at the last minute, he was going to break the news to them and say this to them, "Look, guys, I cannot eat the Passover with you this year." You see, in the King James Version, italicized words denote that the words were not there originally. In Matthew 26:17, this was not during the daytime. Neither was it the 15th day of Abib, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This was the first of the days of unleavened bread. The Israelites had a custom of calling all 8 days inclusive between the 14th and the 21st of Abib the days of unleavened bread, even though on the 15th of Abib commences the Feast of Unleavened Bread. But here in Matthew 26:17, this was the beginning of those days of unleavened bread. Okay? Even though the actual Feast of Unleavened Bread does not begin until the 15th of Abib, there is actually a commandment in the Torah to begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib. Now, let's read it. It's in Shemot or Exodus 12:18. It says, "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 20th day of the month at evening." Now, the word month is italicized here, so it should read, "In the first, on the 14th day of the month at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 20th day of the month at evening." So, we begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th day of the month of Abib, even though the 15th of Abib is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. We begin eating unleavened bread between the two evenings on the 14th. Now, why does the 15th commence the Feast of Unleavened Bread? It is because on the first night of the 14th of Abib, lamb is to be eaten with unleavened bread. but there will be a total of 7 days that we eat unleavened bread following that first night on the 14th. Okay, so let's count how many days we eat unleavened bread. Day number one, the 14th of Abib. Day number two, the 15th of Abib. Day number three, the 16th of Abib. Day number four, the 17th of Abib. Day number five, the 18th of Abib. Day number six, the 19th of Abib. Day number seven, the 20th of Abib. And day number eight, the 21st of Abib. Okay, so you see, we begin eating unleavened bread on the 14th of Abib, but we also have an additional 7 days where we eat no leaven, and we eat unleavened bread beginning on the 15th of Abib, which is called the Feast of Unleavened Bread. By the 21st of Abib at sundown, that is when we cease to eat unleavened bread. Therefore, if our Messiah ate the unleavened bread on the first night of the 14th of Abib, just after the sun went down on the 13th of Abib, this means that he also ate the Passover lamb with it. The night before he was crucified began the 14th of Abib, and he was not violating Torah, as some people might suppose. So long as he and his disciples killed the lamb at evening, or in other words, Ben Ha'areb, between the two evenings, they were still within the parameters of keeping the Passover according to the Torah. Some people seem to think that the lambs were only slaughtered on the evening of the 14th, just before the date was about to change to the 15th of Abib. But, beloved, there were thousands of people making pilgrimage at this time in the year 30, the Common Era, 30 AD, to have their lambs killed in the temple. It would be absurd to think that thousands of lambs could be slaughtered within just a few hours between 12 noon and 3 p.m. Okay, so let's just cover this other issue. Did Messiah and his disciples leave the house? Okay, a lot of people think, how could this be possible when we're commanded not to leave the house on the night following the slaughtering of the lamb? Okay, those who purport that Messiah did not eat the Passover lamb the night before he died will often use this passage in Exodus 12:22 to make the point that Yahushua and his disciples left the upper room that night to go to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. Now, I'm not going to have time to cover this objection tonight. You'll have to wait till next week when we're going to cover this objection. So, for now, I'm just going to say this. Get the teaching. Go to my website, doubleportioninheritance.com. Download the teaching called Messiah Ate the Passover the Night Before He Died. If you want the flash drive that includes 60 ebooks, then just write to me at doubleportioninheritance@gmail.com. And for a minimum donation of $60 to this ministry, I will send you that flash drive. And included on the flash drive is this teaching called Messiah Ate the Passover the Night Before He Died. Okay, I will continue this study next week. In the meantime, shalom, shalom.
We hope you enjoyed today's broadcast and that you are encouraged in your walk with Messiah through the teaching. To visit Maria's website, visit doubleportioninheritance.com. That's www.doubleportioninheritance.com. This broadcast depends on the love gifts and offerings of listeners like you. To send a donation to Maria's ministry, write Double Portion Inheritance, Maria Merola, P.O. Box 7311, Fredericksburg, Virginia, 22404. Or you can donate with the PayPal button at doubleportioninheritance.com. For Maria and all the ministry team at Double Portion Inheritance, may Yah bless you.